Okay, questions on anything? That long list of kind of to-do things for first day, that's all working out. Everyone's on WebAssign. Everyone's done the online lab and the pre-lab and signed up for Moodle. Any problems with any of that? So
the thing that's kind of
equivalent to the Moodle site is www.physics.csbsgu.edu. So that's where I'll put like old exams, these lectures, all of those things are there. More questions? Okay, so you know the plan is in general, I've got this review board that gives you a chance to think about where we were a couple of days ago. So we talked about averages and instantaneous changes of things. And the average stuff really isn't going to be of great interest. It's just something that we use to introduce this idea of instantaneous velocity. So the average velocity is the change in position divided by the change in time. And we use this symbol delta, capital delta, to denote change in. And so that's typically the final value minus an initial value. And the book is, and I am not exactly consistent on always writing these sorts of things. So for example, the book has a tendency eventually to stop writing, and me too, has a tendency to stop writing the delta t to indicate a change in time and just saying divide by time. So those of you who have taken calculus recognize that if we take the limit of the slope of the secant line as the, in this case, as the time goes to zero, we're producing the derivative. And I'm not sure how you did this in calculus. Typically, you might have denoted the derivative as, say, f prime. We like to write it as dx over dt to remind us about the fact that this thing came as a ratio of deltas, as finite differences. So we're thinking about the d as being a really small change, an infinitesimal change. So to go from position versus time to velocity versus time, what we're looking at is the slope of this curve as a function of the time. And you can see the way I've drawn this starts out with zero slope, so the velocity at that time is zero. It reaches some pretty big slope, about there, maximum value of the velocity. Here the slope is zero again, so the velocity is zero. Here the slope is negative, so the velocity is negative. And we can do the reverse by looking at the area under this curve. So if we look at the area, say this area here, we should be able to get the value of the change in x at that location. And we just do it again. So velocities change. We can look at changes in velocity for changes in time to get the average acceleration, or we can take the limit as the two points that we're using for our average get very close together, and that's then the instantaneous acceleration. So once again, we'll probably drop that word instantaneous pretty soon, and anytime we're talking about velocity or acceleration, we mean the instantaneous velocity or acceleration. Now, kind of going back two steps can be a little bit tricky, going from an acceleration graph to a position time graph. And we made this sort of statement about if the acceleration is positive, then the curve of position versus time has to look like a smile. If the acceleration is negative, then the curve of position versus time has to look like a frown. Kind of more special words, which we're not going to be necessarily super careful about. Technically speaking, the speed is the absolute value of the velocity. And the term deacceleration just means that the acceleration is negative. Questions on any of that? Kind of the most important point is this idea of how we go from position, velocity, and acceleration graphically. Then in the last 5 minutes, we talked about the special case of constant acceleration. So if we have a constant acceleration, it means we have a constant slope. And if we have a constant slope, we can express the formula in terms of a line. So mx plus b, something like that. The slope is the acceleration. The y-intercept is what we mean by the initial velocity. And what is playing the role of x here, what's on the horizontal axis, is time. So the velocity at any point is the initial velocity plus some increment that's due to acceleration. If we looked at the area, say here, for this trapezoid, we came up to the conclusion that the base, which is the amount of time, the average height, that should give us the displacement that we've undergone. Questions on any of that? Okay, so kind of what's the lineup? So we're going to be starting lab soon, and it says that you're supposed to have two of those lab notebooks. And you're welcome to buy new notebooks if you want, but they're kind of an infinite number of notebooks that have been left over by previous classes. So if you want, you can go steal one of those old notebooks. They're in 102 in a kind of a series of drawers on the left that are labeled. And you know, you can save yourself $10 by reusing an old notebook. Simply cut out the pages that don't apply to you anymore. We've got a quiz on Friday. The quiz on Friday will deal with these equations for constant acceleration. If you want a single example of the sort of question, you can go online and look at quiz 1 from 191 10 years ago. If you want to know the answer to that quiz, there's a screencast that's also listed there that goes over the answer. You could also look at the old exam, and there are screencast solutions to those exam questions too.
Once a web assignment is done and it's due, is there a way to go back and redo problems for practice?
Or online, can you do practice exam problems? I don't know.
Because like each question has a practice another version or something like that. So once it's shut, like the due date, can we go back and do that?
I don't know. I'll maybe post that question to the people who run it. Yeah, I don't know. More questions? Okay, so 10-minute quiz next time. The plan for today is mostly just to do, since the quiz we're going to be doing a problem, the plan is just to go through a bunch of problems from the back of the book. And I've chosen to do all even problems, so you have the odd problems you can practice on yourself. So these are the fundamental equations. There's one new equation listed here that we didn't get to last time. And that's that equation, which tells us the relationship between how the speed increases as we go to larger and larger distances. And we can prove that equation starting with this guy. And that guy, you remember, was just a direct interpretation of the area of this trapezoid. So we've got there that the change in x was equal to the time times the initial velocity plus the final velocity divided by 2. And what we want to do is get an equation that doesn't have any time in it. And if we take this equation here and solve for time, so that equation says that v minus v naught is equal to the acceleration times time, or the time is equal to v minus v naught divided by a. And our plan is to plug that in right there. So what I've got then is v minus v naught times v naught plus v all over 2a. I don't know, maybe this would look a little bit more normal if I just reverse the order of those two. Because then we have the sum and the differences of two quantities. And if you remember your algebra, well, you can work it out the long way. If we factor everything out, we're going to get a v squared from that term. And we're going to get a plus v times v naught from that term. We're going to get a minus v naught v from that term. And finally, we're going to get a minus v naught squared from that term. And these terms cancel, and we just get the difference between two squares. So if we bring the 2a up to the other side of the equation, we have 2a times delta x is v squared minus v naught squared. Okay, we're not going to be having derivations on tests, but physicists think it's important to understand where these equations come from. So let's kind of take a look at these equations as a whole. So it's really important to kind of recognize what's in these equations so you can pick out the relevant equation for a particular problem. So I think what's particularly important to recognize is this equation here is the one equation that doesn't have any time in it. So if you have a problem that doesn't talk about time, that's maybe a good one to think about. And this bottom equation is one that doesn't have any acceleration in it. So in a given word problem, you're going to want to look to see what quantities have been given and match them up to these sorts of equations. And it may be that there won't be a perfect mix, that sometimes you'll have to calculate some quantity in order to use it for another equation. We'll see kind of how that works. Okay, so plan is just to work a lot of problems, and I guess I have a question for you. So the problems we're working are there, and there are lots of reasons I'm sure you can't read that. You can probably read it a little bit better there, but then you maybe can't read the board as well. So how do you want it? Who wants it like it is currently? Raise your hand. Okay, and who wants it like that? Yeah. That's what wins. Okay. So Jules Verne is a pretty well-known science fiction author, French. And so this is way back in the 1800s, and he wrote a book about travel to the moon. And kind of before rockets, the way he did that was by making this basically 200 meter long cannon and firing people in this cannon towards the moon. They, of course, didn't come back. And so in order to escape from the Earth's gravitational pull, we'll learn in a month or so, you need that velocity. You need about 11 kilometers per second. And the question is, what's the acceleration that the people in that bullet are going to experience if they undergo this process? Okay, so this is a problem that doesn't talk at all about time. It does talk kind of intrinsically about an initial velocity, right? Because we know that before you fire the bullet, it was going at zero speed. And we're told what a final velocity is, and we're told what the distance the bullet traveled. And we're asked to find an acceleration. So if you kind of make a matchup to these equations, no time, this is what we want, and we know all the other quantities. So we should be able to plug and chug with this equation to get what the acceleration is. So if we do that, we've got that the acceleration is equal to the final velocity squared minus the initial velocity squared divided by 2 times the distance. And the final velocity is this 10.97 kilometers per second. The initial velocity is 0, and the distance we're traveling is 220 meters.
Hmm? Do you want us to change 220 meters to kilometers for the sake of having
a bit? Yeah, so we've got a unit problem to deal with. So the question, we got to have consistent units. So we either go to kilometers or we go to meters. And typically the answer that we want, the usual answer for accelerations are going to be in meters per second squared. So meters seems like the right thing to go. I cannot grade it wrong if you give me the acceleration in kilometers per meter per second squared, right? They're both right answers, unless I explicitly say you want it in meters per second. So they're both equally right. This is, I hope it's clear, much more logically based than the other one. So that's the one I'm going to do. I'm going to convert this kilometers to meters. And the easy way to do that is just remember that kilo just stands for 1,000. So this is really 10.97 times 1,000 meters per second squared minus 0 squared all over 2 times 220 meters. Let's check our units before we hit the calculator. In the numerator, we're going to have meters squared per second squared. In the denominator, we're going to have meters, so as promised, we're going to get units of meters per second squared out. So now it's just a matter of plugging in, seeing what we get. So we've got 10.97. I'll do it as an n or exponent 3 just because it's a little bit faster. I'll square it and then I'll divide it by 2 and divide it by 220. And I get a huge number of meters per second, right? 2.74 times 10 to the fifth meters per second squared. So typically, to kind of give you a feeling for numbers, accelerations are often expressed as a multiple of g. So we'll say that the acceleration is 10g. I guess I haven't talked about g yet. G is the acceleration of gravity, and it's kind of the one number that you need to memorize anytime soon. And it's 9.8 meters per second squared. So, which is about the same thing as 32 feet per second squared, but you don't need to know that number. So if we say that we're accelerating at 10g, it means we have an acceleration that's 98 meters per second squared. So we'd like to express this as some number times 9.8 meters per second squared. And I hope it's clear that this number is got to be the 2.74 times 10 to the fifth meters per second squared divided by 9.8 meters per second squared. And this is about 10, so it's going to be 10 to the fourth when we're done. So this number is going to be basically 2.79 times 10 to the fourth g for the whole acceleration. So human beings can survive maybe 15 g for short periods of time, maybe 20 g in a collision, but you can't survive 20,000 g. So doesn't work unless you're Superman or something like that. Nice idea. That's why we don't launch people to the moon on big cannons. So instead, the rockets accelerate over many kilometers as they work their way out of the Earth's atmosphere. Okay, so next problem. It's cut off a little bit, it's 38. So car accelerates uniformly, so that's the key word that says that these equations are the ones we're going to apply, from rest, that tells us that the initial velocity is zero, to a final speed, which is unfortunately given in funny units, 40 miles per hour in 12 seconds. Find the distance the car traveled during this time and the constant acceleration of the car. So let's do part B first, because I hope it's clear that's the easiest part, because we can see what the change in velocity is, and we just have to divide that by the time to get the acceleration, right? It's something that we could have done in the last lecture. But we do have that 40 miles per hour to deal with, so we are going to have to do some unit conversion. And there's no reason for you to memorize these conversion factors, but since I just worked these problems, I actually remember them. So what we've got is 40 miles per hour and 1609 meters is exactly the same thing as 1 mile, so that's just multiplying by 1. And 1 hour has 60 seconds in each second, excuse me, has 60 minutes, and each minute has 60 seconds. 60 squared is 3,600 seconds. So the final velocity in units that we like is 40 times 1609 divided by 3600, and the answer is 17.9 meters per second. So Often it's useful when you're working these problems to kind of do a sanity check on whether the numbers are reasonable. And notice that the number of miles per hour is, you know, 2-3 times the number of meters per second, you know, as opposed to 100 times or 100th times. Pretty much the meters per second should be less than, but roughly comparable to the number of miles per hour. Okay, so the acceleration is just the change in velocity. We started from rest, divided by the time. So 17.9 meters per second minus an initial velocity of 0 divided by 12 seconds. So we can do a unit check. In the numerator, we've got meters per second. In the denominator, we've got seconds. So what we've got are meters per second squared. So I crank this thing out on my calculator, 17.9 divided by 12, and I get an acceleration that is 1.49 meters per second squared. I'm starting to see myself get into what I think is a bad mode, where I just crank out these problems and you quietly write down the answers. So I hope you'll ask questions like, why did you choose that equation? Right? Why did you do it that way? Otherwise, you could just listen to the lecture and not bother to come to class. Okay, so that was part B. So part A, how far did the car travel during that time? So if we ignore that we actually know what the acceleration is, what we know is the initial velocity and the final velocity and the time. So is there an equation that just involves distances and times and velocities that doesn't involve the acceleration? And this does it, right? We're trying to find this. We know the time. We know the initial velocity and the final velocity. So we can calculate everything through like that. Now that we've got the acceleration, of course, we could, for example, plug into that equation. But I'm pretending that we haven't done part B yet, so we could just go right to that bottom equation. So you want to recognize, often when you're working things like on an exam, you really want to kind of write down yourself a little note as to what you know and what you don't know, and maybe even circle those numbers so that you can find them quickly. Okay, so what we have then is the displacement, which is what we're trying to find, divided by the time, is the average velocity. So the distance we want to go is the average velocity times the time. Makes sense. And we know that the final velocity is this 17.9 meters per second. The initial velocity is 0. And the time is 12 seconds. Can do a unit check. We have meters per second times second. So we're going to end up with meters. And all I need to do is to crank those numbers out on my calculator. And what I get is 107 meters. And again, just as a sanity check, right, that's not a million. I mean, you know that this problem has to do with cars and things that are doing mostly normal things. So if you got a tenth of a meter or a million meters, you'd know that you were wrong, right? So you can do 100 meters seems like a reasonable distance for a car to go. Questions? Okay, so we get now to a little bit trickier questions. So here we have a train that's 100 meters long, and it's going initially at 82.4 kilometers per hour. The engineer applies the brakes, and later the last car crosses is going past the crossing at 16.4 kilometers an hour. Assuming constant acceleration, determine how long the train blocked the crossway. Disregard the width of the crossway. Okay, so you can imagine yourself sitting in a car as the arms go down, the train is initially going at 82.4. Sometimes later the caboose, if they still had cabooses, crosses the arms at a much slower speed. How long did you have to wait? Right? You could have just looked at your watch, but then it wouldn't have been nearly as interesting a problem. So one thing I think that is kind of important to realize right off the bat is that the problem is kind of making you think about the front of the train and the back of the train. But instead, focus on the front of the train, right? Because that's the thing that is, I would say focus on the front. That's the thing that is moving at a uniform acceleration. And if you think about that, then we know the initial position, which we might as well call zero, of the head of the train. And if the train is 400 meters long and the end is currently at the crosswalks, that means that the front of the train has an x value of 400 meters. Right? So what we know then is the initial position and the final position. And we know the initial velocity and the final velocity. And they're asking us to figure out the time. No, they tell us that the acceleration is uniform. That means that we can apply these equations. But we don't know what the acceleration is, and I don't even think they ask us for what the acceleration is. Yeah, we're assuming constant, which means that we get to use these equations. Question? Nope. Okay, so it's this guy again, right? So once again, we know everything except, in this equation, we know everything except the time, and we can calculate the time. So what we've got then is that the displacement divided by the time is the average velocity. If we write that in kind of a more normal fashion, the displacement is equal to the average velocity times the time. And what we're interested in is the time, so that's the displacement divided by the average velocity. So they've given us these velocities again in what in Canada would be normal units, kilometers per hour, but we really want them in the units that we use in this classroom, meters per second. So we're going to want to convert them. But we could convert them both now, or we could add them up and then convert them. And I think the latter is a little bit easier. So if we have the 82.4 and the 16.4, we can add those guys up. So we've got 98 kilometers per hour. And we could divide by 2 to get the average speed, but we might as well convert that kind of immediately. So we have 98.8 kilometers per hour. And obviously there are 1,000 meters in a kilometer. And by this time you know that in 1 hour there are 3,600 seconds. So we've got 98.8 and we want to multiply by 1,000 and divide by 3600. And what we get is 27.4 meters per second. So what we've got then is a distance that was 400 meters. Yeah, I'm not sure where to go. I'm going to go up here. We've got a distance that is 400 meters. We've converted the sum of the velocities to 98.8 meters per second. And that's supposed to equal the time. Let's do a unit check. We've got meters over meters per second. So the meters go away, and this is 1 over 1 over a second.
You put 98.8.
Ha 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 ha. I love it. Thank you. Lots of people helping me out. 27.4. Much nicer to get the right answer. Of course, I'm not even checking my answers. So. And you can't check them in the book, so I'm always right. Okay, so meters over meters per second, 1/1 over seconds, and that tells us that the answer is going to be in seconds. Okay, so I've got half of my 27.4, and I've got... 13.7. Say again?
13.7.
Yes, yep. I had it on my calculator, so I didn't have to re-enter it. And what I get is 29.2 seconds. Seems like a reasonable possibility. Yes, I will even check that one. Okay. So next up, I guess it's 48. So I think the picture is that we've got a wall and we have a guy who's going to throw something up, and the guy is basically 1.55 meters tall. And the wall is 3.65 meters. And he's going to throw something straight up at 7.4 meters a second. And so, of course, it's going to go up and come down. And the question is, did it in fact go over the wall or not? So let's deal with this problem generally first before we deal with the specifics. So if something goes up and comes down, how high did it go? Right? So if we were to make a plot of position versus time, it went up and it came down. How can we calculate the height, the maximum height that it reached? So the first equation tells us the height at any time, so that's a start. What time do we use? The right time, right? So what's special about this time as opposed to any other time? Yeah, and what's special about that? Yeah, so when it's reached its maximum, it's stopped going up and it's going to start going down. So if we were to make a plot of the velocity versus time, it started out fast, and right at this time is when the velocity went to zero. So in general, we know the velocity is the initial velocity times the acceleration times time. And again, I haven't really talked about this yet, but the acceleration of stuff under free fall is this quantity g. And since we chose our axes going up, the force of gravity is down. This thing is deaccelerating. You can see that the slope of this is that. So this acceleration is minus g. Right? The slope is negative for my velocity versus time curve, and that slope is minus 9.8 meters per second squared. So I can calculate the particular time when the velocity is zero. Right? So this time, if I bring this v naught over to the other side of the let's do it. So if I bring the v naught to the other side of the equation, I have minus v naught is minus gt, which tells me that the time is minus v naught divided by minus g. So this special time is v naught over g. That's how much time it takes to burn off the original velocity that I put on the rock. Now, if I take this time I can plug it into the equation that we have that describes how high something went. Right? So that says that the change in position for any old time is the initial velocity times the time plus 1/2 the acceleration times the time squared. For our particular problem, the acceleration is down at 9.8 meters per second squared. So what I've got is the initial velocity times time plus 1/2 minus g times t squared. And all I need to do is to plug in this t every place it occurs. Okay, so what we've got then is v naught times v naught over g. That's that time. I'll pull that minus sign out. Minus 1/2 g times v naught over g quantity squared. Well, notice that both of these terms have v naught squared divided by g, right? It's only 1g because one of those gets canceled out. So this is v naught squared divided by g. There's 1 there, and there's minus 1/2 there. So this maximum altitude is 1/2 the initial upward velocity squared divided by g. So this kind of isn't a fundamental equation. It's not as generally true as those equations are. And it's not that hard to derive, but it's an equation that you might put on your cheat sheet. But it's very much a secondary equation. It deals with a particular problem as opposed to those more general solutions. Okay, so let's calculate. How high do we go? What is our change in position when we throw this thing up? Well, so the maximum altitude we've calculated is 1/2 the initial speed squared divided by g. The initial speed is this 7.4 meters per second, and g is 9.8 meters per second squared. Let's do a unit check. Right? So we've got meters squared per second squared in the numerator. In the denominator, we've got meters per second squared. So the second squareds, they cancel out, and one of the meters cancel out. So in fact, we're going to get meters out in the end, which is good. And all we have to do is crank away. So we've got 7.4 squared, and we've got 9.8 dividing it, and we've got 2 dividing that. So it's going to go up 2.79 meters. And since 2.79 plus 1.55 is 4.34, it's going to go above the wall. So what is the speed at the top? So we're asking for a velocity, asking for the velocity when it's at the wall level. So we want a velocity, we know an initial velocity, we know a displacement, we know the acceleration, because the acceleration is minus g. We don't know anything about times. Could calculate a time if we had to, but so is there an equation that does what we want it to do? This guy, right? We know the initial and final velocity. Excuse me, we're trying to find the final velocity. We know the initial velocity. We know the acceleration. And we know it went up this 3.65 less 1.55. Okay, So what we've got then is that the final velocity squared is equal to the initial velocity squared plus 2 times the acceleration, which is minus, with our choice of coordinate systems that are going up as opposed to gravity that's going down, we've got that. So the initial velocity is 7.4 meters a second. Might as well bring that minus sign out. 2 times 9.8 meters per second squared. And our distance that it went up is the difference between the height of the wall and where we started. Did I get those numbers right? Yes. So of course, the velocity is going to be the square root of all of that stuff. So let's plug and chug. So we got 7.4, supposed to square it, and we've got 9.8 and 2 and, well, 3.65, 1 point, probably could have subtracted those in my head, but this is 2.1. And so what I get before I took the square root is 13.6 meters squared per second squared, right? That's what I've got for my units. And when I hit the square root button, I get 7. I'll round, well, I won't. I'll put the right number of sig figs. 6.9 meters per second. Yep, I found that number. Okay, so that's the speed when it crosses the top. Find the change in speed with the rock thrown straight down from the top. If it was thrown straight down with a speed of 7.4 meters per second, moving between the same two points. So part of their point in this problem, I think, is to just think about how these velocities change. So let's do that. When it went up, right, it was going up at 7.4, and when it reached the top, it was this basically 3.7. So the change in velocity was 3.71 meters a second. That's how much speed it lost in going up. How much speed is it going to gain in going down? Well, I'm going to choose to work this problem a little bit differently going down than up. So we could work it exactly the same way. But I want to demonstrate that you don't have to choose the y-axis going up. The book is real. Yes?
I have a question about the last problem. If we're trying to find the velocity when the rock reaches the point where it's equal to the top of the wall, wouldn't it be easier to find the knot as your starting value if you were to take it from that point to where it reaches the apex and have your final velocity be zero and then take the change in x because you've already found how much farther it goes? You take 2.79 plus 1.55, you add that up and then subtract 3.65 and then take that as your change in x. Wouldn't that be easier?
I don't see that. So the alternative, I'm not sure I understand your alternative method yet. So you're going to deal with dealing from the top as opposed to from the bottom.
Just the space of like where the rock goes up.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about this little piece, right?
Yes.
And so your suggestion is?
That you solve for V naught, and so it'd be V naught equals 2a, negative 2a,
oh,
times the change in x.
Yeah, that works, but to me it doesn't seem easier. So let me describe what I think you're saying is that if we just deal with this little upward piece between here and here, we know what the final velocity is at zero. So we can put in zero for this guy. We don't know what the quote-unquote initial velocity is, which is now the velocity when it's just past the wall. We know the acceleration, and we know this distance because we calculated how high it went, and we know that the wall is this particular height. So yes, we can plug all of those quantities in and use that same formula. So different strokes for different folks, right? It works. It should give you exactly the same answer in the end. More questions? Okay, so now we're going to throw this thing down. And the book is always very careful, and maybe it's good, to choose the y-axis going up. If we choose the y-axis going up and we're throwing it down, then the initial velocity is negative and the acceleration is negative, and everything will work out just fine. But, for example, in lab 3, I mean, when things are falling, it's a whole lot easier just to take that. I think it's easier to take the direction down as being positive. Under those circumstances, now the acceleration is plus g because I've chosen my y-axis to go down as opposed to up. Now the initial velocity is going to be a positive 7.4 meters per second. Now if I start playing this game, I have to be real careful if I mix results, right? Because I have changed my y-axis, so some quantity here is going to be different from this quantity with my new coordinate system. But as long as I don't mix modes, everything should be fine. Okay, so in my new version, I have made this the origin of the y or x coordinate system that's going down. My initial velocity is now 7.4 meters a second. And what we're interested in is the velocity when it hits the ground. Where ground or when it goes must be 1.55 above the ground. Same 2 points, yep. So we have this distance that is 2.1 meters, and we're interested in the velocity. Of course, it's going to be accelerating as it falls, so we're going to get a velocity that's more than 7.4 meters a second. Okay, so if we think about our equations, we know what the acceleration is, we know what the initial velocity is, we're trying to find the final velocity, and we know what the distance is. We have no idea about what the time is. So this is the one equation that doesn't have time. So it's the reasonable one to use. So the final velocity squared, which is what we're trying to calculate, is the initial velocity squared plus 2a times the displacement. With my new coordinate system, a is going to be plus g, because I made my y-axis go down. My displacement is going to be positive, because I went in the positive x direction. So this is going to be plus 2.1 meters. And the velocity, it's squared, so it doesn't matter a whole lot in this particular problem, but it's going to be plus 7.4. Okay, so my speed squared is going to be 7.4 meters per second squared plus 2 times 9.8 times 2.1. And all I need to do is to crank those guys out, take the square root to get what the speed is. So I got 7.4, I'm going to square it, and I've got 2 and 9.8 and 2.1. And what I get here is basically 96 meters squared per second squared. The velocity is going to be the square root of that, and that's going to be 9.8, close enough, 7.9 if you insist, meters per second. So I think one of the things that the book is going to point out is here, we only gained a little bit more than 2 meters per second of speed. Whereas here, we lost 3.7 meters per second of speed. Does that make sense? Can we understand why the speed gain loss is different under these two circumstances? Well, one way of understanding it is to think about the time that's involved. Which took longer, for this thing to go up to the top of the wall or for this thing to go down from the top of the wall? Yeah, going up, because it was slowing all the time, and here it's speeding all the time. And remember that the change in velocity is equal to the acceleration times the time. So here, g had longer to act, and therefore changed the velocity more than it did in this circumstance. Longer time, bigger change in velocity. Okay. So I think these are cut off, but I'm guessing that this is 54. So far things have to go straight up or down, right? Because we haven't dealt with sideways. That's the topic of the next couple of lectures. So this baseball goes straight up, and the hang time is 6 seconds. The time it takes to reach just the maximum height is 3 seconds. And we're supposed to figure out what the ball's velocity was and what the height was. Okay. So if you remember this logic in dealing with maximums, for the ball to reach its maximum height, that's the place where it was went from going up to going down, the velocity had to be zero at that point. And the general equation for this line is that the velocity is whatever it was starting with by how much it changed. And so we can figure out then a relationship between the speed that the ball has initially and the time it takes to reach its maximum height. So in order to reach its maximum height, all we need to do is to, and that should make sense if you think about it physically too, right? Because we're losing g units of velocity every second. So we need to go from some initial velocity down to zero. So the initial velocity must have just been g times t. So 9.8 meters per second squared times the 3 seconds. If we check our units, notice that the seconds are going to cancel and we're going to get meters per second in the end. So we got 9.8, 3 times it, and we get 29.4 meters per second. Now we're used to things like 100 mile per hour fastballs as opposed to 30 meters per second fastballs. So just for the sake of comparison, it might be useful to convert this into some kind of more useful number, like miles per hour. Well, I shouldn't say useful. More commonplace in this country number, like miles per hour. So if we've got 29.4 meters per second, and we know that there are 609 meters in a mile, and we know that there are 3600 seconds in an hour, we can just crank that thing through. We want to divide by 609 and multiply by 3600. So this is a 65.8 mile per hour hit. That doesn't seem right to me. I wonder if I hit a wrong key. Is that right? Did I do it right? Boy, it seems slow. Okay, I'll trust you. Okay. 56. So 56, they have this picture, if you have your book, that shows this guy undergoing this rapid acceleration and deacceleration. They were concerned about whether they could have ejection seats work without killing the pilot. Incidentally, not uncommonly, pilots are maimed by their ejection seats. It's a non-trivial concern. So what it says is that at the end of this test, this guy was going 632 miles per hour. That's basically the speed of sound. And he was brought to rest in just 1.4 seconds. And we're supposed to figure out what the acceleration was and the distance he traveled with that acceleration. And remember that, I don't know, 10, 20 G, you don't want to exceed that and live to tell about it. So we'll see. See if this guy lived or not. So like lots of practical problems that deal with velocities, kind of the first thing we need to do is to deal with unit conversion. Right, so we're going to go from miles per hour to meters per second, and then we can answer the rest of the question. So we've got 632 miles per hour. Roughly, without using your calculator, what should be the answer? So remember that the numbers should be kind of comparable, but a little bit less. So I don't know, 200 meters per second? That's my guess. So we'll see. So we got 630. So unit conversion in 1 mile, there are 1609 meters. And in 1 hour, there are 3600 seconds. So the hours go away and the miles go away, and we end up with meters a second. So I've got 632, 1609 times it, 3600 divided by it. And, I don't know if you want to say that I was right or wrong, 282 meters per second. It's really helpful to have some sort of estimate as to what your numbers are going to be so that you don't get kind of out of the world answers. Okay, so we have an initial speed, we have a final speed, and we have a time, and we can calculate the acceleration just like we could have yesterday, right? The acceleration is the change in velocity divided by the time. So our final velocity is zero. Our initial velocity is this 282 meters per second. And we did this all in 1.4 seconds. So we're going to get a negative number. This is deacceleration. So I get 202 meters per second squared. And if I describe that as a multiple of g, basically by dividing that number by g, we get 20.6 g, right? So it's kind of right on the edge of a survivable event. What's the distance he traveled? Well, we know the acceleration now, so there are lots of equations we could use, but if we didn't have the acceleration, this is a great equation, right? Because we know times and velocities. So the distance you're going to travel is the average velocity times the time. Final velocity is zero. Initial velocity is this 282. And we're going to do it for 1.4 seconds. So 3 football fields or so. Questions? This is kind of similar to problems we worked before. Yes?
Did you divide it by 2?
Oh, I think you're right. I'm pretty sure you're right. Two football fields. I didn't calculate that, so I can't check it in these notes. More questions. So you remember we worked those problems of the missing time, right? Somebody went halfway at this speed. How fast did they have to go to finish it? So this is kind of a new twist on this. You know that typically runners run at a constant pace, and then at the end, they're going to kind of take off. They're going to do their best effort, use up the last gram of energy they've got. So what we have is this person who is doing 12-minute miles, not all that fast, but probably faster than I can do it. After 10 minutes, they've got 500 yards to go, and the question is, if she can accelerate at this rate, 0.15 meters per second squared, can she make it? This is probably not a real question. That is to say, runners probably don't accelerate at a uniform rate for 500 yards. But anything to have numbers to plug in. So instead of working the exact problem as stated, let's calculate what the acceleration that would be required to just make it. And if you accelerate it even faster than that, then clearly you're going to have made it. So what we have, once we work this through, are going to be an initial velocity, right? We'll assume that the 1 mile less 500 yards divided by 10 minutes gives us an initial velocity. We're trying to calculate an acceleration, and we know our required time, right? 2 minutes, 120 seconds. So we're trying to find acceleration. So what we know are the initial velocity. We know the displacement that's required, 500 yards, and we know the time. And from this, we want to get the acceleration. So if you look, this is the guy that does it, right? Only one thing that we don't know, namely the acceleration. Okay, so let's work it through. So the initial velocity is the 1 mile less 500 yards that was all covered in 10 minutes. So how many yards in a mile? Louder. Yeah, people who run it know it. You could 5,280 divided by 3 also should give you the same answer. And of course, 10 minutes is going to be 600 seconds. So let's just work this in yards as opposed to meters if we can. 1760 minus 500 yards all over 600 seconds. So that's going to be our initial velocity. So I get 2.1 yards per second. Comes out exactly even, so maybe they really intend for us to do this in yards. So the distance we need to go is equal to the velocity times time plus 1/2 the acceleration times time squared. So the distance we need to go is those last 500 yards. We know the initial velocity, that's what we calculated there. We got to do this in 2 minutes, right? Which is 120 seconds. So all we need to do then is to calculate the acceleration. So it takes less time to move letters around than it takes to move numbers around. So it's really an advantage to deal with the letters as long as you can and only plug in the numbers at the end, right? It's no different. If you want to leave the numbers there, you can, but it's a lot of typing. But if I just use delta x, it's going to take me half the time that 500y is going to take. Okay, so if I proceed as I say, I've got the delta x, I'm supposed to subtract off the velocity times time. So the 2 is going to come up, and it's the acceleration that I want. The time is going to come down, and that's what I need to get my acceleration. So what I've got is 2 times the 500 yards I need to go. I'm going at this 2.1 yards per second for 120 seconds, and I have to do it 120 squared. Let's take a look at our units. We've got yards up top because we multiplied. Oops, I've got yards times what? Yes, I've got yards up top, and I've divided by seconds squared. So this is, instead of meters per second squared, it's yards per second squared, which is pretty much the same thing. So we can plug in chug. So we got 500, we're supposed to subtract 2.1 times 120 and multiply that by 2 and divide it by 120 squared. And the answer is 0.034 yards per second squared. And we could convert that to meters, but remember that a meter is basically the same thing as a yard. This is clearly, yes, less than a tenth of a meter per second. So yes, she can do it, and that's the acceleration she needs. Running out of time, huh? Two minutes and one problem. We can at least start to talk about this guy. So this is kind of a funny problem in what they've given us and what they haven't given us. So this truck driver is going to hit this tree, and we're supposed to figure out how fast he's going to hit the tree. We know the acceleration, and we know the time, and we know the distance. But we don't know the final velocity. Okay, so that's the equation that's got what we need. If we think about how this is going to work out, the final velocity is, of course, going to be less than the initial velocity, right? He did brake. So we're going to get a negative on this side of the equation, and the acceleration is negative. You know, that's a good sign. And I'm sure we can't crank it out, but we've got that the final velocity squared is the, we don't know the initial velocity either, right? So that doesn't help. Well, looks like we're calling it quits. So if anyone wants to get a free notebook, follow me.
Oh.
ones that were assigned were 31.
No, it's a web assign. It's
right.
The ones on there.
Right, but,
but they're
here.
They're
right?
These ones?
They're exactly the same as here.
Okay.
So 31 was one of the assigned ones. 34 was an assigned one. 36 was an assigned one. 46 was an assigned one. And 69 was an assigned one. And they should be in that same order, like the last one would be this one.
None of those look even familiar from the web assign. Maybe I'm thinking of like the last one.
Oh, the ones that...
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm being dense. Those are the ones that are assigned for this time. So the...
From last time, it was like the second or third to the end.
So did I write down here what I assigned?
I could go back to my room and look at my book and compare it. I have it still open on my computer, and I can email you which one it is.
Yeah. I could also get it from the listing, but I wish... So, could it have been this one?
It's not that one.
It's not a graphic one.
Nope, I remember doing that one, but it was after that one. And it had to do with driving, but it wasn't this car one. It had to do with the car, like...
Well, it won't take. I hope it won't take for a second to log.
Okay. I
know if I have to catch them, so we can save that. Oh, okay. So you can just email.
Okay.
That'll work.
Okay. Yeah, I will get that email out to you as soon as I get back to my room.
Sounds good.
I asked a couple other people and they didn't know how to do it either. So.
Sure.